The first half of the sixth season of The Sopranos is out on DVD for those who want to catch up before the second half begins Sunday. One of the major players in those episodes was Joey Ganascoli, who played Vito Spadafore. Vito had been a familiar supporting character for much of the show, one of the trusted members of Tony's crew. But Vito had a secret. A couple of guys collecting protection money at a gay bar spotted Vito dancing there. After word got out, Vito panicked, left his wife and two kids, and fled to New Hampshire, where he got involved in a relationship with the owner of a diner, a guy he nicknamed Johnny Cakes. Vito lied to Johnny Cakes and claimed to be a writer from Scottsdale working on a book about boxing. Here's a scene right after Johnny Cakes figured out that Vito wasn't who he said he was.
Are you even a sports writer? I mean, here we are talking about taking the next step in this relationship. I ask you to share my home and you can't even be straight with me. This. Nice knowing you, Vincent.
Jimbo, come on. I'm not a writer, okay? I'm not from Scottsdale. And the car's not my sister's. I'm actually from New Jersey.
I knew it.
Some went down. I had to leave. My home, my contracting business, my wife, my kids.
Are you drunk? It's not even 11 o'clock.
You think it's easy? I miss home so bad my heart's a f***ing lump. I'm barely holding together. Stuck in the sticks, running out of money. And now this? You think I was looking for you?
Soon after this scene, Vito decided to return to New Jersey, where his fellow mobsters were waiting to kill him. Terry spoke with Joey Ganascoli last year, just after Vito met his untimely fate. Ganascoli was a chef before he became an actor and recently co-authored a novel called A Meal to Die For. It's about a gourmet chef who's connected to the mob.
Joseph Ganascoli, welcome to Fresh Air, and congratulations on this season. It was you've just been really good. It's been a great part for you, and it was really fun to watch you.
Thank you.
All the people in Tony's crew are revolted by the idea that Vito is a homosexual, and after Vito is outed, they no longer trust you, and it's obvious, pretty obvious right away. You're gonna get killed eventually. Do you have any friends who are as homophobic as the characters in The Sopranos and who were revolted by your portrayal in the same way that the characters in the series were revolted by Vito when they found out who he was?
Yeah, my friends were like, how many times are you going to kiss this guy? And they would ask, if I would have killed 20 guys in the night, there would have been, a lot more pleased with that, but to be with another guy, it's something else. And, I'm from Brooklyn also, and I go to restaurants that, known mob hangouts, and, some guys give me dirty looks, They're a little upset about it, but, I'm acting, and, it happens, and it's a role that maybe, made a name for myself, so I don't have a problem with it.
Just as your character, Vito, is becoming sympathetic, and we realize, this character's been repressed. He could have had a different life. He could have had a better life. He didn't necessarily have to be, killing people in the mob. Then, you decide that even though you're in New Hampshire, and you miss your kids, and you miss part of your old life in the mob. So you leave New Hampshire, and you're driving on this, country road going back to Jersey, and you hit a car that stopped next to a mailbox, and the driver has been checking his mail. The driver insists that the accident has to be reported to the insurance company, and you can't afford to do that because then you'd be discovered and probably killed. So you just shoot him in the back of the head. And, I thought the writers were so brilliant in that scene because really you're not a good person in the series. You've killed other people. You shot Jackie Jr. in the back of the head, and that's just one of the things you've done. And you still have it in you to just be a killer. Did you like that scene?
Up until then, I thought I was very sympathetic. But one thing great about David Chase is that he doesn't want you to really like these people. Whenever people start saying, they're regular guys, they're sitting around watching a game, we're at a strip place, or they're, just hanging out, And then they do something like when Paulie Walnuts had to kill his mother's friend just to give Tony, you know, some money. And when people are thinking like, yeah, you know, the guy just wants to, you know, live and let live. He shows them that that's who they are. They're killers. They're, you know, not nice people. And I was upset about that because, you know, I thought, you know, all these people are going to really think I'm a sympathetic character. And I did that. But that's what he does. He doesn't want you to like these people. That's who they are. And Vito missed a life, and he wanted to get back and, you know, get back in the mob life. And that's what he missed, the action. It was a little boring, although it was great seeing people, you know, gays living with straight people, getting along and live and let live. But it's that other life that he missed, and his kids, you know.
Let's talk about how you were killed. There's like three guys with bats who are waiting, baseball bats, waiting for you in your motel room.
Pool sticks.
Pool sticks. Oh, I remember them as bats. Okay, they're pool sticks. Yeah. So, and then Phil Leotardo, who's the number two in the New York mob, is just like sitting on the bed watching as they beat you to death. And of course, you're his brother-in-law. So can you talk about shooting that scene and how much of a beating you actually took in it?
Well, first of all, did you notice what Phil came out of, right?
What do you mean what he came out of? Oh, he came from behind the curtain, you mean?
No.
Was it a closet?
Came out of the closet.
You know, in my mind, I always remember things wrongly. In my mind, he's like standing behind like the drapes in the room and he comes behind. So he came out of the closet. That's funny.
Yeah.
Oh, that's
really
that's funny.
That's David Chase's sense of humor.
Boy, that went right past me.
Yeah. So they, first of all, because of my, you know, I just had double hip replacement.
In real life.
Yes. 7 weeks ago, and you always see me limping on the show, and my legs are crooked. It's really hard to watch. Now, you know, I'm pain-free. I was in so much pain, but I'm pain-free. And so it was hard to do a lot of these scenes. I mean, I for the most part, I try to do as much as I could. And, you know, in the fight scene, I couldn't get down, but I pushed the guy, and I did as much as I could, but it was very painful. But so I walked in, and they didn't really they didn't hit me. They hit the stunt double. Or did they hit me? I think they did hit me, but then I was down on the ground. They showed that. But a lot of the stuff my stunt double did. And that scene there, I mean, it was really pleading for my life, and it was very emotional. And
you're pleading with gaffer's tape over your mouth. You're trying to plead.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. And they didn't use a lot of it, which I was surprised about. I remember I actually had chest pains because I was really, you know, pleading for my life, and I was upset that they didn't use more of it because I thought it was a great moment for me. Because you saw the terror in my eyes, you know.
So this season, you lost a lot of weight in real life. I read it was like 160 pounds while the show was on hiatus.
Huh?
Did you have to like tell the people I lost 160 pounds, so you'd better write it in?
No. They know I did it. Maybe at the end of season five, which is maybe like almost 3 years ago now, I had the band. See, I was very thin, and then I started opening restaurants, and I started gaining weight, maybe 10, 12 pounds a year. I stopped going to the gym. I didn't have time to work out, stopped being active, and then my hips were bothering me, so I didn't realize what it was. So I went less and less and started eating and drinking and gambling, which we'll get into about what's in my book. But 10, 12 pounds a year, and then finally I had enough. So I had the band done, the gastric band. And, you know, I started, that was in the end of season five, I had it done. And when we came back, I just, you know, was losing weight. So if maybe 2.5 year period. So they knew I had it done, and they knew that, you know, there was going to be a weight loss. So they worked it into the script.
There's several characters on the show who are very heavy. I mean, over the years, like Big Pussy, Bobby, Tony's put on a few pounds lately.
Yeah, Tony put on. Well, Bobby Bacala, they put a fat suit on him.
Oh,
that
really?
It wasn't his gut. No. Oh. And he's a big guy, and he put on some weight, but that wasn't. He had a big gut on. They took it off him this year. Tony's put on weight, and I think that was for another role he did. And I think it goes with his character. I mean, that's an end joke. Like, you know, 9 times out of 10, anytime you see him, it's usually in the house. He's always eating.
Do you think your weight helped you get the part?
Yeah, I think it definitely did. I think they were looking for a big guy. I mean, there is a lot of big guys in the mob. You know, they eat. There's a story about this guy, undercover guy. He put on 80 pounds, you know, when he was doing undercover, you know, because it's all about restaurants and eating out and, you know, it's the life.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Joe Gennascoli, and he plays Vito Spadafor in The Sopranos.
Played,
yes. That's right.
We could use past tense now.
He's been whacked. It's all over for Vito unless he comes back in dreams. Uh-huh. But as for Joe Gennascoli, this is probably really good for you. I mean, you have so much attention now because of this this season that probably opened up doors for you.
And I hope so.
And also, I want to ask you about your novel. You have a novel that you co-wrote called A Meal to Die For.
Yep.
Subtitled A Culinary Novel of Crime. And this is about a guy who owns a restaurant that's you know, connected with small-time crime. You've worked in a lot of restaurants. You've owned one or more restaurants. Do people want to think that you've been connected? Does that give you, like, more cred as a Sopranos character?
Well, I think we all were at one point. We know guys that are in this life. You know, being from Brooklyn, I know who is and who isn't and what's their position and so on and so forth. But this book I wrote was loosely based on my life as a chef, and I was a bad gambler. I used to gamble a lot. I mean, that's what led me to acting. But I was, when I was gambling and losing, I used to lose, you know, you win, you lose, but you never beat the bookie. You never beat the odds. And one Sunday, I lost $60,000 in gambling on football games. 15, 15, and then 30 was my get-even game. And if I ever win an award, I got to thank Cody Carlson because he was the backup quarterback for the Houston Oilers back in 1990. And it was a Sunday. They were resting their players for the playoffs. The Pittsburgh Steelers, number one defense, were resting their players. And Cody Carlson, the backup quarterback for Warren Moon, threw for like 500 yards. And I was just like sitting in there watching the game stunned and thinking, like, I just lost $60,000. I got to get out. I got to pay everybody off. I got to sell my interest in the restaurant. And I'm moving to LA to pursue acting.
What made you think you'd make money as an actor?
Well, back then, before you even answer that, when I was winning and losing, you know, I was, to help pay my debts off, became known as a food fence. And
what's a food fence?
A food fence, like a jewelry fence, but I knew how to move hot food. And wine with phony labels, homemade wine, we would make phony wine labels and sell them, you know, not what it was. Or oil transfusions, we call them, and, you know, canola oil cut with, like, some bootleg olive oil, and then we'd, recan them or we'd rebottle them. So I know how to do that.
So you basically put cheap food in fancy bottles.
Yeah, it wasn't what it said it was. Not that it was bad. I mean, you know, I said a little integrity, but it just wasn't what it said it was.
Mm-hmm.
And so on. So
you felt okay about doing that?
Well, at the time, and I was like hustling, you know, not something, it just, you know, it was something I would use, but it just wasn't what it said it was, and, you know, I was hustling, that's what we do in Brooklyn.
So you didn't mind that you were taking advantage of people?
Well, you know, back then, I have more scruples now, or some, but, and that's what the book's about. But, you know, this is how I had it, you know, I hustled. You know, if someone said, listen, I got this shrimp, can you move it? And I say, yeah, I'd move it.
This is Fresh Air. I'm David Bianculli, in for Terry Gross. Let's get back to Terry's interview with Joey Gannascoli, who played Vito Spadafor on The Sopranos. Vito was killed last season, and in the coming months, as the series presents its final episodes, he's bound to have plenty of company. Gannascoli used to be in the restaurant business. When we left off, he was telling Terry that he decided to get out of the business and pursue acting after he lost $60,000 gambling.
I called up my friend Tim Kelleher, who's a working actor, and I said, Tim, I told him what happened. He goes, I said, I'm just going to go out in L.A. and pursue it. And I did that for 3.5 years, just getting bit parts, and I was hustling. But, you know, I was tired of being broke again. I moved back to L.A. My family wouldn't even talk to me for the first year because of, you know, what I did. I lost everything. I left this girl I was seeing and so on. And then I was, working menial, cooking in jobs, cooking in restaurants and not making much money. I was tired of that. But, you know, again, because I'm from Brooklyn, what I used to do is, you know what the breakdowns, I don't know if you know what the breakdowns are.
Is that for betting?
No. Oh. Breakdowns are what the casting directors.
Oh.
Yeah, send out to what they'll, you know, for episodes and movies, episodic TVs. And if they're looking for a character, say, 40 years old, six lines, balding, you know, it's a description of what they need for the movie or the episode, you mm-hmm. know? And the only one that get these breakdowns are the agents. So I started working with this agent out of his house, but he was a young kid. He wasn't like, you know, I'd be up at 6 o'clock, where I'm going to go, drinking coffee, wait until 9 o'clock so I can go to his house and help him go through it just to see what's out there. And I was wondering if they were submitting me. Well, he's submitting me for the, you know, sending my picture. And then hopefully I get the call. And I'd say, did you call? So this lasted about 2 weeks. And I was driving him nuts, you know. So I says, you know what? I don't really trust this guy. I don't think he's doing the right job. So I would go up, wake up at 5 in the morning, run to his house, grab these breakdowns, run to Kinko's, copy them, then bring them back to his house, and then I would go through them myself. And I started submitting my own picture. And then I would call up in a few days and say, listen, my name is James Hoving. I'm Joe Ganascoli's manager. I'm in town for a few days. And I want to make sure that
you would pretend that you were James Hoving, Joe Ganascoli's manager? Okay.
Yes. And I would, they'd say, who are you? I said, James Hoving. I'm Joe Ganascoli's manager. I want to make sure I'm in town for a few days. I want to make sure that he gets seen for this role. And they go, what? Where'd you say you were from? And I say, I'd have to say it, and I change my answering machine at home, say, James Hoving Talent. I say, you know, I have an East Coast and a West Coast office. And that's how I started getting auditions. That's how I got my first role. And I got my SAG card.
Did anyone discover this, like, little con game you were playing?
No. And then my roommate, who Tim, you know, the Jesuit, he says, listen, I need a James Hoving call. Can you call for me? And I'd say, call for him. You know, the funny story is that he wanted to get seen for a Bobby Kennedy movie. And I said, listen, you got to see Tim Gallery. He's great. As a matter of fact, I signed him when he was playing all three Kennedys in an off-Broadway play. And because his agent wanted to get him in, and I got him in he didn't get the role, but I got him in for the audition. So everybody was asking me to make James. I even Hoving calls because I started submitting. You know, I said, listen, there's a thing that's being cast you're really right for, so submit yourself and I'll call up. And so I was doing people favors.
So did James Hoving help you get your role in The Sopranos?
No. By that time, I was back in New York. I did maybe, I did those two movies. And they said, just call us up and see, you know, what's right, what you're right for. So they said, well, listen, we're doing this show called The Sopranos, and we want to bring you in. And at the time, I didn't want to do it because I said, well, I don't want to do TV. I just want to do film. And they said, no, you come in and do this. It's going to be big. And it was.
Tell me one of your favorite stories about life on the set at The Sopranos.
Let's see. Well, usually when we kill someone, we take them out to dinner. I haven't got my dinner yet.
Oh, God, really?
Yeah, we took Jackie Jr., we took the guy who hung himself, Bobby Fornaro. I'm waiting for, it's usually a fun night.
Well, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
My pleasure.
Joey Ganascoli speaking to Terry Gross last year. His character of Vito is dead now, but lives on and dies again in the latest Sopranos DVD box set.